Welcome to Conversations on the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In what is LGBT History Month, we continue to focus in on LGBT adoption and fostering. This week, we talk with gay foster carer Bea. Bea, along with her partner, have been fostering for nearly 2 years and now have a longer-term placement. Bea explains some of the process to becoming a foster carer in more recent times and also shares some useful thoughts about selecting an agency, which applies whether you're a same-sex female couple or not. If you're interested in telling your story in the Adoption and Fostering podcast, then feel free to email us or contact us through our social media channels. Hi, Bea.
Hello, hi.
So welcome and thank you for coming on to Conversations on the Adoption and Fostering podcast. It's really good that you offered to come through. And of course, it's coming up to LGBT Adoption and Fostering Week. So we wanted to kind of do a feature about that. And you kindly stepped forward and are willing to tell your story. So thank you.
You're welcome. I've listened to some of the conversations, so I thought it was about time I put myself forward for one.
Yeah, they're kind of persuasive, aren't they, when you think, oh, yeah. Well, actually, I've got a story. Perhaps we could start by just you kind of telling us a little bit about you and your background and where you've come from on your journey.
I'm a fairly new foster carer, actually. So we got approved at panel in January last year. And had our first placement in the March. And at the moment we have a young lad staying with us, a teenager, which wasn't what we were expecting, but has actually gone fantastically. And my background was in social care. So that's where I sort of decided. Yeah, I worked in a family support role, so I wasn't a social worker. But I worked on, you know, interventions with young people and parents. And while I was there, you know, there were lots of cuts and changes in teams. And actually, I thought the only way I can have an impact is by having one or two or three or however many people, but having a direct impact on, you know, being with them longer term, 12-week interventions. Just I could see that at the end of my 12 weeks, there was so much more potential and things that I could do. So I thought, actually, I'd love to foster one day. And then when I met my partner, she was up for it too. So I was like, great, let's go for this.
So is that the main kind of driver behind your fostering, or is it something you'd thought about even before that? Because it tends to be when you're in this field, you have a kind of passion for young people and children, don't you? So was that something that you kind of consciously were aware of earlier? Or
yeah, so I think when I was younger, I thought I wanted to be a teacher. Then I realised that wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. Then I thought I'd want to be a social worker. And again, it wasn't what I thought it would be. And once I was in the field, I knew I wanted to work with young people and I wasn't really sure how. But actually, I think the role of a foster carer sort of allows me to be that person for someone who actually can change their lives, but also you get it back as well. So I think, you know, that they change your life, you change theirs. It's a really nice relationship.
Yeah. So I'm tempted to jump ahead and ask you what it's like caring for a teenager, but I'm not going to. We'll just
save that one.
So yeah, we'll save that one. So tell me about the process, because I mean, the process that I went through 13, 14 years ago for adoption is obviously the same, but very different. So tell us about kind of your decision in terms of selecting an agency and what that was like, and you know, how unusual, if it was unusual for the process, did it feel like you were being questioned about sexuality and stuff like that? Tell me all about that.
Yeah, so because my partner doesn't have a background in social care, we look to sign with an agency rather than the local council, because they offer better training and support in terms of their workload is smaller. We looked for an agency where they had a good training program. And then we sort of put out a few feelers and basically decided based on the people that got back to us and spoke to us and gave us all the answers and actually listened to what we were looking for. Because there were some you know, we actually were kind of already starting the process, and then we got an email back to say, oh, hi, yeah, we'd like to talk to you. And it was like, it's been 3 months. You know, that's not really what I'm looking for, is someone that takes 3 months to answer an inquiry email. So, you know, we really selected the agency based on them being quite a small sort of family run agency. We were a bit worried about some of the things we'd read, you know, morally about ones that are making money. I know they all are, but you know, it didn't really sit right. Some of the really big ones sort of just made me a bit concerned about where that money was going. I think the process itself, the agency we went with, it was good. They were open to us being same-sex carers. It didn't seem to be an issue. The panel that we went to did ask about it, and they did have to cover it in our assessment, but it didn't feel like it was going to be a barrier, which was nice. It just felt like they were trying to check that we talked about what might happen if a child came into our care who maybe expressed some homophobia or had an issue or suffered some kind of bullying or discrimination because of our situation. So I think they just wanted to check that we'd thought about it, because obviously it will affect, but it didn't seem like a barrier, and you know, that was good, because it's quite a uncomfortable process anyway, you know, someone delving into your entire past. But it was not done in a way that made me feel uncomfortable, so that was good.
Yeah, and probably I'm assuming helping with that would be your background and kind of potentially, you know, your background and your career has probably helped you to understand that sometimes there's questions like that that need to be asked, but not too intrusive to the point where you feel, oh, you're questioning my sexuality or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that I suppose has stuck in my mind is, I think that they're sort of, some of the social workers that you speak to are almost thinking, oh, you're a same-sex couple, can we find you a gay child? And it's like, that's not really, you know, that's yes, that might be helpful to the child, that they could be in a, you know, family environment where it will be acceptable and open and we can discuss things. But actually, shouldn't all your foster carers be able to do that? And therefore, should it just not matter? So I suppose that was the one bit that stuck out to me, that was a bit like, well, you know, any child really will be fine. Don't need to be, you know.
Oh gosh, okay. Okay, that's interesting. So in terms of family and friends and stuff, what did they think about that? I mean, you know, there's probably the standard kind of thing about, oh, you hero kind of thing, but what, you know, the reality, was there anybody who was kind of concerned, or Were they all kind of really up for it?
I think they were all quite up for it, but I think there were some people who maybe just don't have that understanding of what fostering means. So, you know, we've been quite open with people that ask us questions, you know, talk to us about it, get to understand it, because I think there's that thing where, you know, you get a placement, you go out, you meet your friends or your family, and they're like, oh they're really well behaved, oh, they were really good. And it's like, yes, they're just a child, you know. It's, I think there's that preconception that children in foster care might be naughty, or they're the kid that's going to misbehave or have issues. And yes, every child is going to have things, and there are things that children in care may have experienced, but they're still going to, you know, have manners and be polite and be kind and, you know, those kind of things. And I think that's the bit which people were a bit unsure, what are the children going to behave like. And but no, our families have been really supportive. The child that's staying with us at the moment came in to live with us just after his birthday, so missed out on the birthday, and they helped us through a half birthday, and you know, it was a great event because we'd had everyone there. And
so in terms of did you have any doubts through the process? You know, was there any kind of things that were thrown up to you that made you think, oh, actually, can we do this, but you know, can we not do this? Was there anything that kind of was thrown up into your path? Oh, that's a bit of a curveball. I didn't expect that one to come along.
I think the whole process is designed to make you question. So sometimes after, you know, as part of your Form F, which is like the longest process in the world, which I understand why it has to be. But, you know, there are parts of that where the social worker could leave and we would look at each other and be like, oh, my goodness. You know, I think sometimes they have to prepare you for the worst. And so they'll share maybe, you know, what would you do if a child did this? And you think,
yeah,
is a child going to do that? and then you have to rationalize and think, well, actually, you know, that could happen anyway. That could happen with a friend that comes around and gets drunk, you know. Situations arise and you deal with them. But I think, yeah, there's been a lot of conversations that we've had where we thought, hadn't thought about that. How would we deal with that? And I suppose, like, deciding to take on a teenager, we were a bit like, what have we done? Why have we decided to do that? But, you know, actually, we've worked together on it, and it's been fine. It's been okay. But I think it's that sort of fear of, you know, we haven't been parents before, we're doing this without parenting experience. Maybe that's good in some ways. It's obviously bad in some other ways that we're learning as we go. But you also can't do the thing that you do with younger children where you sort of, something happens, you can discuss it, and the child is not aware that you don't know. But with a teenager, it's like, right, I'm going to have to really just act on the spot, and I'm going to have to pretend that I know exactly what I'm doing and that we're not panicked by this. And then when he goes to bed, it's like, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think a little bit less sort of space to make decisions when they're older, because they're there going, well, can I do that? And it's like, oh, I don't know, can you? Ooh, let's figure this out.
That is such a I'm laughing because it's so true, and I think you're right. And having being the parent of three teenagers at varying points, yes, it's very much like that, especially when they get to that age. You know, the first time they go out when they're 18, you know, that's really eye-opening. So, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I get you. High five on that one. So going on to that first placement then, I mean, when you were going through the process, what sort of age range were you thinking that you would be caring for, or had you discussed it? I can't remember kind of the assessment process in terms of that. So, you know, how was that kind of, where did you come?
They wanted us to be approved from 0 to 18. But the reality is, and one of the things actually that was very difficult, and more than our sexuality, we had to convince a panel to allow two people that have jobs to foster. And that actually was a challenge, even though we had made a plan, you know, reducing hours, and I get quite good holidays, so we could cover the summer, you know, and we presented them with this plan. But I think they still were worried about people working. So we said they'd have to be above 5 so they could be at school, because we wouldn't be able to care for anyone who needed full-time care. And then we had sort of discussed up to about 10. We really wanted them to probably be in primary school, and I think that was just that fear of the teenage challenge. Not that a 10-year-old wouldn't be a challenge, but different kind of things, I think. And as quite young in terms of being a foster carer, probably not that young anymore, but as quite young carers, we were a little bit worried about children too close to our age, and whether they would still sort of respect our authority. So I suppose that was another reason we were a bit worried about teenagers. When we were approved and they started to come through, and we'd sort of read a few profiles and things that had been sent to us, and then we sort of said, well, actually, a little bit older would be fine, so let's go to maybe 12, then we can do 5 to 12, and a few more came through, and then one came through for a 13-year-old, and we were like, well, let's look at it. And you know, it was a really good match. So actually we thought, well, what's 1 year, even though that's 3 years more than we were planning, and that was the top limit, let's just go for it. But I think the match is more important than the age. But you get fixated on age, don't you? And it seems like quite a big deal, and then it's not.
That's very true, actually. You do, don't you? Because I think in your head you have it kind of set, and it takes a while for that to unpick itself, I think. And I think you're right that sometimes a profile can say so much more than just your kind of, you know, right, 5 to 10, and we're done.
Yeah.
So that is, that's clear. I think that that transfers over into adoption as well. When you're being linked and matched, you know, you have it in your head what you're looking for. Not necessarily, no, that's the wrong thing to say, not what you're looking for, but, you know, what you'd consider. And I think as time goes on, you actually realise that there's more to it than kind of specific kind of boxes that you put a child into in terms of age, behaviours, medical conditions, etc., etc. If something feels right, it just feels right.
Yeah. I think actually when we read the profile, the most important thing to us that came out from reading it was that it was going to be a child that wanted to be outside or sporty or interested in activities, because we're quite sporty. So actually we were like, well, that's great, we can share that, and you know, it gives us really good grounds to build a relationship on if we're interested in the same stuff, and then the age really doesn't matter.
No, I think that's quite a key thing. So you agree to this placement?
Yep.
How did you feel?
Well, it's an interesting process, isn't it? And there's no way to change it, but it was, I mean, we probably actually had a bit more contact than other people do, but we agreed to this placement. He came round to meet us on the Thursday. And in that meeting, we were asked if he could come to live with us Friday and could we pick him up
really?
From school. And so, you know, it was quite, okay, it's Wednesday. We've said yes. Thursday, he comes to say hi. We meet each other. He sees the house. Friday, we're picking him up and he's going to live here. And that was like, but I mean, it happened very fast. We got very nervous about all the wrong sorts of things, and you know, you plan all this stuff you're going to do, and then it never goes quite to plan. But at least because it was a Friday, and I think that it was better, because I think there was a bit of a question of, oh well, we could leave it to the Monday, but actually it meant we had the weekend to plan some fun stuff and get to know each other, which I think if it had been straight into a Monday, it would have been like, off you go to school, see you later. Wouldn't have given us a chance to get to know each other. So it was quite good in that sense.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, all three of you must have been really nervous by this prospect. I mean, you know, that's human nature, isn't it, to be nervous about new things. But this is a massive thing, you know, first time kind of carers, parents, and, you know, a child moving from where maybe he was settled or, you know, had established himself a little bit to move in with two new people. And, you know, it must have been hell, actually, in the run up to it, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it is a difficult situation, isn't it? But I think he straight up asked us, you know, how many kids have you cared for before? You know, how many people have lived here? And I think we had not prepared whether or not we would tell him we were new carers.
Right.
But then we decided, you know, why not? why tell him? Because then if he finds out, the trust is gone. So we said, you're the first one. So let's figure this out together. You know, sometimes we'll need to check with the social worker whether you're allowed to do X, Y, or Z. And sometimes you'll have to tell us how you do things, but these are the rules. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, some of it might seem harsh, but once we get to know each other, we'll see how those go. You know, like things like bedtimes, where he's allowed to go, who he's allowed to see, all those kind of things. Because it gets that little bit more complicated, doesn't it, when you have to go through a social worker to check which friends they can stay with and things like that. Because it's just normal for a teenager to be like, oh, I'm going to Harry's or Bob's. But you have to know where they are, what's the address, who you're going to be with, and it does make it a little annoying for them. But I think he's got used to it now, so.
The last thing, isn't it, is, I mean, a lot of it is about kind of agreeing the rules as you start, so that it's comfortable for all. And, you know, I guess that's a key thing. But well done on the honesty, because I think you're right, actually. You know, you would have kind of put doubts in his head, and he probably would have been more challenging.
Maybe. I think he quite likes that he is the first one.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, with fostering especially, you know, this is still going to be a lifelong relationship. Well, I hope it will be. You know, that's the ideal, isn't it? You know, even if he moves on, goes back to birth family, whatever the process or what happens next, you've been a part of his life for however long you've been a part of his life with him for, and that's an important part for him, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's important that he can see this place as home and us as part of his family, whether it's, you know, it doesn't need to be in the way that he originally thought of family, but we're two people that he can trust and depend on now, you know, and that's important. So I think we decided that there's no point starting any of our relationship on a bit of even a white line, because teenagers find out and then the trust is gone, and he, you know, they'll find it hard enough to trust anyway. So just,
no, that's fair. So given all that, my last question for you, would you do it again?
So this young person is staying with us long term now, but we have started the conversations with him to prepare him that he won't always be the only one, and that's a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's got to work, it's got to be right for him, but at the same time, he would be amazing as someone who could support another child going through that, because he's an incredible child, and for someone to come in and feel that's, you know, as scared as he was on the first night, and him to be here and say, hey, it's not that bad, I've been through this already, I can help you through it, and he is that kind of person. So definitely we'll be looking to take on another child, but we're just waiting for the right time and the right match, really.
Yeah, what would your advice be to anybody who's listening, who's thinking maybe about fostering or going through the process, or, you know, coming towards a panel? What would your advice be as someone who's been there and done it?
I think that my advice would be that panel and the process is difficult, but as long as you are prepared to be open and honest with your social worker, they will help you through the process. I mean, they have to ask questions about your background, your previous relationships, any times when you've had low mental health or other issues. But the reason they're doing it is so that they know what support to give you and to make sure that you'd be the right person to support children who've experienced trauma. So they have to ask those questions. But as long as you're prepared, you're open and honest, and you've got someone to support you through the process, not necessarily someone you're applying with, but a friend or a family to talk to, then I think it's not as scary. So my advice would be that if you've been thinking about it, just make an inquiry, find out some more, and just go for it, really.
What's interesting about this conversation, B, is the fact that there's been, I can't see any differences now between LGBT and straight. I don't know what to use there. I don't know what I use, but do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just quite normal now. And I don't know if you feel like that, but, you know, certainly the conversation we've had, I could have been having this with a straight woman. It's there's no difference.
Yeah. And so I suppose what I would say is that if you've started this process or you've made an inquiry and you have felt like you've been treated differently, then I think you have the wrong agency, because there are agencies out there that do treat you exactly the same as any other applicant. So if, you know, I haven't experienced any kind of discrimination through this process, and I mean the council because we work very closely with them as well. I mean, the social worker was desperately looking around the house going, "Oh, look at all these rooms you've got. You'll be a great carer. We've got these other," and we had to slow them down.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. There's not been any kind of barriers from them either. And so I think if you do experience any discrimination or just feel uncomfortable with the way the questions are, because they will ask about your past, but maybe some people won't be as good at asking those questions, or if they have their own personal biases, then just look at another agency, because it's not worth feeling uncomfortable for a process that's already quite difficult.
And I think that is probably the best advice you could have given to anybody, actually, because I think that's in this day and age, in 2020, I think that is quite a key thing, isn't it? Because all agencies should be welcoming anybody from any community, really, regardless of sexuality or religion or, you know, marital status or all that sort of stuff. So I think that's really good. So B, thank you so much for talking to us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.